Hey, good morning, everyone. This is Bobby from Bobby on Fire, and I am here this morning with
Willie Thompson.
And Willie is a retired firefighter, and she has been in many positions from the drag shovel on a crew up to being a regional fire director for the Forest Service, right?
Correct, yep.
And Willie, what year did you start?
I actually started on a YACC crew and then moved into fire. Once they gave me a drip torch, it's like, oh, this is legal? Oh, I'm in. Okay. So yeah. Worked on a YACC crew, then on a BD crew, then engines, prevention.
Now, YACC crew stands for?
YACC Young Adult Conservation Corps.
So those are young folks who are just entering the workforce.
Just entering the workforce, kind of like Job Corps.
Yeah.
And it was cut. Reagan cut the program, so we didn't have that. It was from young adults 18 to 21. So it was a very good program. You got to learn the Forest Service as far as all the departments. And like I said, once we worked in fire and they gave me a drip torch, it's like, this is legal.
For those folks who don't know what a drip torch is, it's a 2.5 gallon or 2 gallon container that basically has a wick at the end. And when you turn it upside down, a mixture of gasoline and diesel comes out and ignites the woods.
Correct.
When we're doing prescribed burning, pile burning,
all of that. We also use propane tanks too. They were 45-pound tanks that you put on your back, and it had a wand on the end lid, and those were fun too.
And so for those of you who aren't firefighters, you might not realize just how much fun firefighters have doing prescribed and controlled burning. And so that gets a lot of us, it hooks us.
And then you start working, and for me, it was like I wanted to learn everything, so just kind of went up through the ranks and ended up retiring as a regional fire director.
So if you listened, maybe a month or two ago, Curtis Heaton was here, and Curtis also was a hotshot superintendent and ended up as a regional fire director. And so lots of us have similar paths. My path was similar, except I detoured to a fire department for 15 years and then came back to the wildland. But so that's who Willie is, and she's going to join in. And the story I want to tell today is about occurrences that have happened over my career that at the time I never thought it was peculiar. But then looking back, you know, hindsight, you get a little bit of better vision. And as I look back, I thought, well, that was kind of peculiar that I had all these things happen to me. And the things are that over my career, I have been very near where wildfires started. And so if I say that to a bunch of my firefighting friends, they look at me and start laughing and go, oh, yeah, you were really near the wildfire starts. Or fires in general. And because then, you know, firefighters are oftentimes accused of being arsonists. And that's, there's good reason because
we've had a few of those occurrences.
The most famous arsonist in California responsible for fatalities was a firefighter turned fire marshal, fire investigator. And this happened, I think, maybe in the 90s, and he was arrested and is still in prison. So it's not unusual that firefighters might do something stupid. Firefighters aren't immune. Well, over my career, there have been many instances where I'm driving down the road in my work truck, going back to the station or going back to a field office, and there's a fire on the side of the road. Now, it might be just a little brush fire, maybe a little grass fire. And in the first few times this happened, I thought, well, the rancher out here out in the field, the rancher's probably burning the weeds off. So I don't bother stopping. I don't see the rancher as I'm driving by. And I'm thinking, oh, he should be out there. Someone should be out watching their little controlled burn that they're burning the weeds off in the ditch.
But many times they burn the ditches and they're not right there. So,
So I assume, you know, the first time this happened to me was years and years ago. And I get back to the station and I hear, hey, did you see anything as you were coming through People's Valley? No, I didn't see anything. Well, there's a fire on Hayes Ranch, and it's, you know, you better get back out there. It's like, oh, my God, and I'm afraid because it's like, yeah, I saw that. I turn around and drive out there. The barn burns down. And it's like, oh my God, I could have put that fire out with what I had in the back of my truck and my boots just kicking dirt, you know?
Right.
It was such a small fire. And so that was the first time. It's like, wow, okay, you know, that's a good sign. And so over my career, that's happened multiple times. Now, more recently, I was in Idaho working, and I had a hotshot crew member who was on light duty. He had injured himself, and I was going out early season to do preparedness reviews. And so for those of you who aren't familiar with that, it's just something that the Forest Service and BLM, wildland agencies do, because we have a lot of seasonal employees. When you bring them on, and they're maybe their full-time captain, gets them all back in shape and ready to go, and you go out and you drill to see if they're really competent, know how to pump water, pull the hose, do all the firefighting stuff, maybe cut line, depending on what you're doing with that particular module, whether it's a hand crew or a helicopter crew or an engine. So I'm taking this young man with me, and I said, you know, I just have experiences where so many times I'm just driving down the road and I see a fire. And, you know, he just thinks I'm telling stories. And we had gone out to do the preparedness drills. Now we're on our way back to the station. And we're on the interstate, and we're, I don't know, maybe 10 miles east of Boise. And I got the radio on. And, of course, I'm listening. I'm scanning all the local fire departments as well as Fed agencies. And sure enough, there is a fire on the interstate milepost. And he said the milepost. And I was pretty new there. I had just started. And the young man looks at me with this look on his face. And I was like, what's the matter? He says, it's at milepost, you know, 200 or whatever. And I'm like, yeah, so? He says, that's right here. We're like 2 miles away. And I was like, well, there you go. See, I told you.
Yeah.
So we pull up. We're the first on the scene. I think City of Boise was en route. BLM was en route. I don't know who else was coming. And it wasn't a big deal. It was had median, and then had jumped off the median on the side of the road. So it was relatively easy. And we both jumped out, had our gear, and we start cutting line. And the engines all showed up. And, you know, I kind of like if you listen to the story about overdressed in California. For those of folks who've listened to that story, I just happened to end up being on a fire in the middle of Sacramento. Same thing happened to me. But that's a whole, there's other parts of that story, but it's a funny story. But this is the same kind of thing. I just, you know, over the years, this has happened to me often. And maybe more often than normal, because I don't know a lot of people that this has happened to more than once or twice, and this has happened to me a dozen times in my career. And I can pick out places where this has all happened. Washington, Oregon, Arizona, Idaho, California. I was in California one time, and I had just moved to California. I didn't know the area at all. And I was in the small town where our office was and the stations were near. And I'm driving out to one of the stations, and I see a grass fire burning on the side of the road next to this farm headquarters, farm, you know, the house and the barn and all the outbuildings. And I see it, and I think to myself, God, they should have someone there. You know, this is going to get close to their barn. So I thought, after this has happened to me a dozen times, I think, well, I'm going to pull in just to make sure. I knock on the door. There's no one at the house. I start yelling. The fire is burning, and it's getting closer to the barn. And no one is around. And I'm like, oh, my God, this old wooden barn is going to catch fire. So it's like, oh, quick, I better get on the radio. So I get on the radio, and I'm like, I don't know where the hell I am. I don't know what street I'm on. I just moved here. I'm on the highway that goes out of town, the back way, and no, not 25. I know that one. It's this other one that goes, you know. So I'm on the radio, and I thought, well, I'm going to call, you know, on the phone. So I call, and it's in CDF, Cal Fire, you know, the state agency. It's in their jurisdiction. And they know me, but not really well, because I had just gotten there. And I'm trying to describe to dispatch, where is this fire burning? Well, I don't really know. It's oops, you know, on the highway yeah. that goes south, and are you over here? It's right across the river, you know. Anyway, it delayed the response. So as soon as I hang up, I get my shovel, and I start throwing dirt, trying to keep the fire from getting to the barn. Well, pretty soon, the engines show up, Cal Fire engines, and then the municipal engines show up as well. And it burned that barn to the ground.
So it reached the barn.
Reached the barn. I could throw dirt all day, and it wasn't right. stopping that. And so anyway, that's just another example in my career of all these times that I haven't been real effective. It wasn't any good that I was showing up, you know, because I didn't stop the barn from burning down on that one. But anyway, so that's kind of some of the background. Now, at one point in my career, I was stationed in a small community, and in this valley on the east side of the Cascade Mountain Range, there were multiple communities within about maybe 20 miles of each other. There was maybe a half a dozen small communities. And we were seeming to get fires that were starting during the week that were getting pretty good size. They were getting, you know, anywhere between 100 and 400 acres. And so the agencies responding were the State Department of Natural Resources, the Forest Service, who I was a division chief at that time, and then the local fire departments were all responding. And, you know, that's a normal response. Everybody's working together. But we started getting these fires like once a week. And I was talking to the Department of Natural Resource local fire, their fire chief. And we started thinking, you know, there's a pattern here, and we couldn't find an ignition source. So we were pretty sure that these were arson because there is no obvious reason for these fires to start. There was no lightning. They're on the side of the road. Right. They're lit in places where they had a good spread potential, and some of them were getting pretty big.
Were they all in the general location?
They were all in this valley.
Okay.
They were all in this valley. And so I started thinking, you know, it seems like they tend to start on Wednesdays. And they seem to be, like, if you stood in a part of that one spot in that valley, you could almost say somewhere within view of this location,
we're going to have a fire.
We're going to have a fire. Now, I could see for probably 10, 15 miles. So somewhere in that area, we're going to fire. So the state fire chief and I would start to coordinate. You know what? I think this afternoon, how about if I send a couple of my engines down to this location and you send them down there and we'll be ready, because we were starting to think this is some regularity. Sure enough, we'd get a start and our folks were on the spot. But the winds were always blowing in that area, and the fires always got at least a couple hundred acres. So this has been going on all summer. Now, I'm on an incident management team, and for those of you who have listened before to these stories, you know incident management teams are those folks of people that go to manage large fires. And I was assigned to a large fire out of my area. So I had been gone for a week or so, but there was a meeting back at my station, a community meeting that had something to do with something I was really concerned about, and I wanted to attend that community meeting. And my incident commander, who I was working for on the fire, I asked him if he would mind if I left and let the other ops chief, because I was an operations section chief, let the other ops chief take things and let me be gone just for a few hours that evening, and I would be back by midnight at the latest. Okay, he says, fine, but make sure you're back tonight so you can be on shift the next day. So I'm driving back in the late afternoon. I'd left the fire in good hands, and I'm driving a couple hours back to my station. And as I top out over this crest of this ridge and the highway, the two-lane road kind of snakes down through the forest down to the valley, I'm about halfway down to the valley, and I hear tones, you know, dude, fire, you know, this location. And it's one of those fires that we know are are suspicious in nature. Not only that, this particular fire that afternoon was two ignitions on the same road. So now you know. You know that someone was driving down the road, started flicked their Bic or whatever, and then they drove down a little further and started another fire. Now, this one wasn't too far off the interstate, but I'm coming down the two lane. And so I hear that, and I'm pretty close. I'm just, I don't know, maybe 10 minutes away. So I get on the air on my radio, and I said, you know, Division 3 is responding. I'm at this location. I was one of the first ones on scene. Now I'm there, and my engines that work for me are showing up, and the cooperating agency engines show up. Now my guys and the chief of the other agencies know I'm assigned to a fire because I've been gone for a week. And they're looking at me really funny. I thought you were gone. Yeah, but I was coming back for this meeting. I wanted to be at this public meeting. But you were assigned to a fire. Yeah, I know. But I'm just oblivious to anything, yeah. You know.
And I got permission from my IC to come to the meeting.
Exactly. Yeah. It's not a big deal. But what was a big deal was there's a start. It's obviously arson. And lo and behold, Bobby just happens to be nearby.
There, yes.
And so everybody shows up. We got dozers on scene. We've got engines, and we corral this that night. So it doesn't get, the fire doesn't burn past that night. And it's clearly arson now. We know very well we've got an arsonist working. And so what often happens is, as Willie knows, we bring in law enforcement and they form an arson task force. Mostly law enforcement folks, county sheriffs, federal agency, law enforcement officers. They'll bring in fire investigators, and it's a big deal because you don't want people's property burning down. You don't want anyone losing their life, and so this is a big deal if you have an arson task force. So I'm the local fire chief, and so I say to our law enforcement officer, I said, so do you want me going to the meeting? You want me to be there Wednesday when we're meeting? He says, no, why don't you not come to the meeting? And I was like, well, why wouldn't I be there? You know, I should be there. And he's kind of hemming and hawing. And all of a sudden I realize, oh, my God, I'm a suspect.
They think it's me.
Because I had kind of figured out the pattern, right. And then I'm supposed to be gone. Lo and behold, I'm coming back to town, and just coincidentally, two fire starts right near where I am. So I just thought it was, really funny. It didn't scare me because I thought, I didn't start these fires. I'm innocent. Yeah. That went on for quite a while. We ended up continuing to have arson fires. I think eventually he figured out it wasn't me. You know, I wasn't starting these.
Right.
I was just experienced enough to understand where the patterns, to see the pattern. And so I left that job and I went to I got a promotion and I went to another state as a deputy fire chief. And while I'm gone, shortly after I'm gone, I get a call from one of my captains and to tell me they caught the arsonist. So the arsonist, there was an arsonist. They caught him. He says, I thought you'd want to know it wasn't you. And I was like, thank you.
Thank you. And then you're thinking, did some of these people think it was me all along still?
I think that there was some of that suspicion because Bobby always seems to know where they're going to start. And she always seems to be nearby. And so it turns out that this arsonist, he got convicted. He was going through some tough times, he said, and was depressed. And starting the fire seemed to cheer
him
up. Yes. This is the world of arson.
Yes.
And his days off were on Wednesdays. And so to cheer himself up, he was going out and starting fires.
Starting fires.
Yeah. And so they caught him, and that ended that spree of fire ignitions. And some of those fires were significant.
Sure.
They were significant. We had a fire that threatened hundreds of homes with winds blowing about 30 miles an hour.
And this arsonist, what was his background? Did he work for a fire department?
No, he was so a construction guy. Or heavy equipment or something like that. So I don't think he had any background in fire, but he was starting them in good locations. He was starting them in places where they were spreading. So that was just one of those things that have occurred throughout my career where I've been close to. Now, with all of your experience and all your years of experience, have you had much exposure or much experience where you were near fire starts?
Not right near them, but in the regions, you know, like I moved around a lot. So there would be a good fire year. Like my, when I moved to Alaska, they had 2 years that was good fire year.
For those listeners, a good fire year for a firefighter means it's busy.
Yes, it's busy.
A good year for, you might, public that doesn't think about this stuff, you think we're crazy, but when we say a good fire year, it means it was a busy fire season.
Very busy, lots of resources coming in from, you know, the lower 48 into Alaska. I mean, they were on fire. Moved from there to California. And that was a busy fire year.
Yeah.
And then from California going to Region 2, which is part of it is Colorado, busy fire year. So there was a couple of friends of mine that would say, hey, how come every time you move, there's a big fire season, you know?
Yeah.
And so it was just comical, you know, just joking around.
Yeah, but they didn't catch you with a drip torch.
No, they didn't catch me with a drip torch.
Right.
With lighting everything on fire. But yeah, so similar.
Yeah. Well, and so I'm going to wrap up the that story. But you know, as I tell these stories, and I'm always looking for some inner meaning, you know. So what's
the
what does that mean? Well, and so what I take away from this is that, like many of the stories, or like some of the other stories I've told, oftentimes, you know, at work you get. I mean, think about working in an office and someone does something stupid and the rumors start going around. Oh, you know, that was Bobby or that was Willie. You know, and maybe have no basis in fact, but you get painted with that brush. And
you
sometimes it is difficult to recover from that.
Right.
I think a good thing to keep in mind is don't spread rumors. Don't be the person who's, you know,
and it not only happens, I think, like what you said with, the, you know, these fires happening, but it also happens if you're connected with a boss, too, that, you know, and then you get downplayed or whatever because they think you're part of that. And,
The politics.
I've worked for several bosses that were not good bosses, but you get tied into that, that they think you're part of that.
Yeah.
And you're not.
Same thing.
Yeah.
It has to do with people having no reason to suspect someone doing something wrong, or they want to blame someone. In my life, it's happened to me as a young seasonal firefighter where I got blamed for something that turned out that they demoted me the next fire season.
Right.
I went from a GS4 to a GS3, and I got taken off as an assistant on the engine to be on a crew. And I had no idea what had happened or why it had happened. And then I found out at the end of that summer, well, last year this happened. And it's like, well,
because you were associated with it. So people just assume that you're that person.
And I didn't even know. I didn't even know that instance that thing had happened, but I was blamed for it.
Right.
And so, you know, my story, the story today is, I think, kind of humorous, but it's a good lesson for us to be careful.
Exactly.
How we spread the word about things, and then because you could find yourself as the one being accused.
Right. When you think you're doing something good.
Yeah.
Right.
So with that, folks, I'm going to sign off, and I'm going to thank Willie for joining me. Willie is just visiting here, and we're sitting here with a cup of coffee, and John will be back next week because he's home with a sore throat. And he told me it wasn't the coronavirus. He only drinks Coors Light.
Right.
So no coronavirus for John. But he'll be back next week. And in the meantime, I appreciate everybody listening. If you have comments, suggestions, please leave them on the webpage. Thanks, everyone. We'll talk to you next week.